around during the holidays. Sunday, November 13th from 4 until 6:30. To register, call 658-4101. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Marlo Harmon, your host for today's Community Matters. I hope that you have enjoyed yourself since our last time on speaking. Today we have two guests with us, and I am really interested and excited about the subject matter that we are going to be discussing. It has been a part of a lot of conversations, especially with the presidential race that is going on, and that is the discussion of immigration reform. Reform. So today we are going to be talking with Linda Boyle, who is Vice President of Racine Interfaith Coalition. And we're going to be speaking with Sue Spicer, who is also a member of Racine Interfaith Coalition. And both ladies are a part of the Immigration Task Force. So welcome, ladies.
Good morning.
Thanks. Thank you so much for joining us today on this really important issue. So, Linda, how did you get started with actually being involved in an issue with regards to immigration reform?
As a member of Racine Interfaith Coalition, when asked to be part of the Immigration Task Force, I didn't hesitate to say yes. Mainly because I was beginning to see some things happening in our community that were concerning me. Okay. As an educator, I was seeing some children in my classroom who were concerned about actually going home at the end of the day because one of their parents may be gone because of deportation.
All right.
And then when a person on my block was deported, a man who had owned his home for almost 20 years, I was shocked. Beautiful family, paying property taxes, paying income taxes, sales tax, Social Security tax, which he could never collect upon, and so forth. And he was deported, and when I found out why, I was a little more surprised, because he had been stopped multiple times on his way to work for driving without a license. And when I investigated more, I found out that as of 2009, that undocumented immigrants were no longer able to obtain driver's licenses in our state. And that is when I became more involved.
So you have a personal experience. Your personal relationship with regards to actual individuals that you know who have been deported and asked or made to leave the country, even though that they've been law-abiding citizens, from what you can understand.
Absolutely.
All right.
We have learned that our neighbors, the undocumented immigrants, are not criminals. They are our neighbors. And when we investigated more, we found that actually crossing the border is not a felon or even a misdemeanor. It's similar to what we would call a civil offense, which is a forfeiture in legal terms, that is like jaywalking for us, crossing the street. The only time that it would be a crime is if someone had been deported and then tried to re-enter the country.
Okay. And so this information is what you have actually researched and understand from your background with regards to your community service on this issue.
Much of our research has come from the 2010 census.
Perfect.
Because that is something we knew we could prove. We didn't want to be out there stating things that actually weren't facts. And that is where it all began for us.
Well, thank you, Linda. Sue, tell me a little bit about your background and how you got involved in this issue with regards to immigration reform.
Well, as a teacher myself, you when you're teaching, you're always aware of students in your classroom that have issues that that may impact their ability to learn or their education. And frequently with the children of immigrants, that was that they were never sure if their parent would be at home when they got there, because there are times when immigration authorities come through and they make a sweep through a factory. And they will take those people and take them to the deportation center or to the detention center in Kenosha. And they're not allowed to inform their families or call home or see their children before they leave. And so often the children don't know until someone tells them what happened.
Okay.
And Linda and I were both working on the campaign in 2010, I guess it was. And we got to talking about our similar experiences in the classroom. And she invited me to join the task force, saying, you know, this might be something you'd be interested in. Well, you know, as a person who believes in social justice and equal treatment, I thought it was something I would be interested in. Well, when I first started with the task force, our main goal was immigration reform. And
And that's that so broad.
That's such a broad statement, and it involves the federal government and influencing the federal government, and that just seemed to get overwhelming because nobody there cared or listened to us.
Right.
And so we decided to narrow our focus, and, you know, as teachers, we're also people who like to have a point A and a point B and a way to get between them.
Right.
So we decided to narrow our focus to the fact that undocumented in the America cannot have a driver's license, but they can have a driver card, which would allow them to drive legally in order to get to work and get to the doctor and get to the other things they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you're familiar with why undocumented people can't drive.
No, I'm not.
Okay. In 2006, the federal government passed a law called the Real ID Act. And it was in reaction to 9/11 because many of the 9/11 perpetrators used driver's licenses to get into places in the airports where they shouldn't have been.
Mm-hmm.
And so they passed the law saying that only legal citizens or legal residents of the country could have a driver's license.
Okay.
Now, before that, undocumented people had driver's licenses. So as those began to expire, they were not allowed to renew them. So suddenly now somebody who could drive and do all the business they need to do as a family member now suddenly cannot drive.
All right.
And so they couldn't get to work. They couldn't get to the doctor. Public transportation has been cut.
A lot more limitations on them.
Right, and it limited them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, each state, according to the Real ID Act, is allowed to issue driver cards, which are a photo ID that allows you to drive your car. And it would also allow you to, like when you go to the doctor, they ask you for a photo ID.
Mm-hmm.
You could use that as a photo ID at the doctor or to get a prescription or to get a bank account or those kinds of things. But it would not allow you to vote, let's say, which is a right of every citizen. So we decided that we would put our efforts into trying to get driver cards.
Oh, okay. All right.
For our unauthorized residents.
And that's a good goal. Also, your task force that's associated with Racing Interfaith Coalition, which is RIC for short, U visas. Tell me a little bit about, and that's what really interested me, when I heard about you being recognized for many of your services and being awarded for your work with regards to U visas as one part of many of the things that you guys do in the community. First of all, I had to share with you ladies before, I was completely ignorant of U visas. I knew nothing about it. And so because it's such a significant impact on the community with regards to decreasing crime possibly or just making sure that it's a step in immigration reform, it was something of interest. Sue, I'm going to start with you. Tell me a little bit about U visas. I mean, the definition of it.
Well, U visas are visas that are extended to undocumented residents. If you are a citizen of the United States, you don't need a U visa because you already have the protection of the Constitution.
Right.
But it's for non-immigrants, and it's set aside for the victims of crime. And that crime could be substantial mental or physical abuse. Let's say a woman is in a marriage where she is either mentally or physically abused.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can be people who are victims of crimes such as battery or robbery. Or there's a long list of extortion, false imprisonment, victim trading, kidnapping, manslaughter, murder.
Seems like quite a few
things.
Of the
so
more serious.
Right, very serious crime. If you are a victim of a very serious crime and you are willing to assist law enforcement and government officials in the investigation and prosecution of the criminals. So that's a big caveat because many times these people they're undocumented residents and they are afraid of the law. They don't wish to help with the prosecution. So therefore, they would not qualify for a U visa. Now, what the U visa does is it extends the same privileges to that person as a green card would, so mm-hmm. that they can suddenly drive a car then or get a job. Mm-hmm. And they can get out of the situation they were in that, mm-hmm. where they were the victim of the crime.
All right. Linda, serious crimes. And the caveat that Sue mentioned with regards to they have to be willing to step forward and assist in the prosecution. And many times if it's a loved one, many times if there's some emotional attachment or fear, anxiety, children involved, that's a big caveat. I'm sorry. And then if it's extortion, I mean, it's not, you know, the simple, it's some, I mean, even in the, even as a regular individual who needs none of that, there may be hesitation for individuals to want to come forward. So what do you,
well, I mean, there's a great deal of fear.
Yeah.
And it is something that the new members of our task force have just brought to us as a concern. Mm-hmm. We had moved our meetings recently to the evening, mm-hmm. so that we could have people come to our meetings that are directly impacted by many of the mm-hmm. issues in our community. Mm-hmm. And when we asked what we could do to help them, mm-hmm. They wanted more information on U visas to overcome much of those fears, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The process that would take place, how to even apply to get the applications,
right.
which they can obtain from immigration, or mm-hmm. they can obtain those from Paul Ryan's office.
Oh.
And then to know exactly what kinds of criminal activities would qualify them for. So what we are doing in our task force is working with them, providing information, helping them research, finding out what some of the obstacles are from their point of view. Mm-hmm. And we're developing a PowerPoint right now along with them, mm-hmm. that they are going to be presenting to their own peers, mm-hmm. very soon. We have a group of people that have just recently joined us, about 10 new members from Amos Church in Racine, and mm-hmm. also from St. Patrick's Church in mm-hmm. Racine, that are working on the U visa PowerPoint.
Okay.
It is something, I could give a little bit of history.
Sure, just
Congress passed the Victims of Trafficking and Violence Protection Act, including the Battered Woman's Protection Act, in October of 2000. So this isn't new. Mm-hmm. It's been mm-hmm. around for a while. The legislation was intended to strengthen the ability of law enforcement agencies to investigate and prosecute cases such as domestic violence, sexual assault, trafficking of aliens, and other crimes, while protecting victims of crimes who are suffering from that substantial physical or mental abuse.
Okay.
So the fear is there.
The fear
we know
is there.
That. But we're hoping with the cooperation of our new Latino members that we can do more educating to bring them out of the shadows, so to speak, to actually apply for these when the need is evident.
What has been some of the challenges that either of you have experienced with regards to starting this up? Because you said it's this part of the task force started in 2010, so only like the last 6 years, the immigration task force. Okay, what have been some of your challenges over the 6 years that have gotten you to where you're at? Any significant challenges? Working with police, has that been a challenge? Working with individuals that maybe feel like you're a threat when you're telling their wife or their children's mother to go and prosecute against them? I mean, I don't know, but...
Well, the fear of police from the community... the community of immigrants is great.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a very cooperative chief of police mm-hmm. in Racine who is reaching out more to that particular community.
Right.
They're very fearful of our county detectives from the sheriff's department for some reason, but maybe the larger force and so
okay.
forth, and where
no one has ever shared why there might be a heavier fear for in the sheriff?
Partly because they would have to drive out of the city to some place that would lead them to have more ability to be stopped because of not having that driver's card.
Understandable.
But in the community, as we are educating the Anglo community, we are finding out that so much is not known, not just about U visas, right, but about all parts of immigration and what is actually going on in our local communities.
Right.
Things like the fact that between 40% and 70% of our dairy farm labor are immigrants, depending on what part of the state you're looking at,
mm-hmm,
that 90% of our fruit and vegetable workers are immigrants, and that can go on, and every business and every manufacturing part of our world, hospitality and so forth, the numbers are great. And therefore, the driving to those jobs is the biggest problem and where the largest fear comes from. Okay. But with the U visas we have been very successful with meeting with our police chief and mm-hmm, with people at the police department just to start that conversation again.
Okay.
About what
was there hesitation on the police department? I would think that there would be, in all fairness, I would, because it would seem like we are overlooking one crime to catch another crime. We're overlooking illegal entry into the United States. We're overlooking that crime to satisfy or to obtain another crime. So I would think that there might be some hesitation. So was there any?
I'm not sure that it was a hesitation. I think that it was a little bit slow in coming to look at their policies as they stand right now.
Okay.
And when we did go to those meetings, we had people who were involved in the community that were from that immigrant community.
Mm-hmm.
Newer immigrants and also undocumented immigrants, also an immigration lawyer, just to go over those things again. And it sort of helped us help them become more active. And now we have had a number of people who have been able to obtain those U visas.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to have gone in a wave with the changing of personnel, say, within the department and so forth. But now it seems to be moving very, very well. The hesitation wasn't so much that they didn't want to have the U visas taking place as things like manpower,
mm-hmm,
and directions from administration and so forth.
Okay.
I think it's also important that we keep straight that, remember, entering the United States illegally is equivalent to jaywalking. So these crimes of violence against people are no way to be equated with jaywalking is not the same as murder.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not really overlooking a crime in order to help prosecute another criminal. So I think that because we sometimes call these people illegal aliens, that's what gets people to think that they've committed some terrible crime. The crime would be if they tried to take advantage of some right that only citizens of the United States have. Otherwise, it's no different than me going to France and living in France for the summer and getting a job.
All right. Okay. You have me speechless. You have me speechless because I'm going to tell you why, okay? Because I invited you two ladies here as my guest, and I don't ever want to seem disrespectful. But Sue, I'm going to say what someone may think. They may think that if they weren't here illegally to begin with, they would not be committing the crime of rape and extortion and some of the other things that we are asking individuals to testify to criminalize them on. If those individuals who were committing those crimes that we are asking, because some of them are, not all of the crimes committed against some of our immigrants into the country are other illegal aliens. I don't mean to say illegal, but illegal immigrants. But some of them are. And we could reduce crime by making sure that we just establish that piece of it. So do you, you know, it's, I don't know. Linda, what are your thoughts?
I'm not sure exactly how to handle that or answer that. We do have some data that talks about the number of crimes that have been committed by undocumented immigrants, but actually the crime rates have gone down in the last years concerning undocumented immigrants.
Because that's exactly what is being perpetrated and said in the news. You know, we have a I'm just being honest. We have a presidential candidate that is saying exactly those things, that illegal individuals that are over here are among individuals that are committing some of those serious crimes.
Go ahead.
I think those are more isolated incidents. Okay.
I'm
looking
at
FBI statistics that it talks about the number of foreign-born in the United States between 1990 and 2013. The U.S. population grew by 7.9%, and that population of foreign-born grew by 13.1% during that same period. But violent crime went down by 48%, and property crime went down by 41%. So higher immigration rates didn't cause higher crime rates. And in most cases, there is a situation for U visas that deals with domestic violence. But that may not be an undocumented person who's committing the domestic violence. Their husband or wife may be a citizen of the United States committing the violence against them. It's more likely that the U visa would be established in a case where they are, let's say, a victim of gang crime, where gang violence has been perpetrated against an undocumented person, and they want to prosecute the gang violence. So it's not necessarily that undocumented people are the ones committing the crimes. It's crimes being committed against them.
Right. It seems clear enough to me that immigration is not the cause of many of the injustices that we are discussing today. U visas for the victims of crime and driver's cards to allow people to move legally and safely in the community is not necessarily coming from the undocumented immigrants over U.S. citizens. These efforts that we are trying to pursue basically address some of the very basic human needs. To quote our organizer, Pastor Michael Miller, the goal should be to honor the dignity of all people living in our communities. He's our Racine Interfaith pastor. That's our organizer. So as an organization, RIC is seeking to address a range of injustices, lifting up the needs of undocumented for sure, but not only for the immigrants. The school-to-prison pipeline is clearly something that contributes in a strong way to the poverty, low educational achievement, the increased crime, and a lot of that is within the African-American communities of our state. And we have also a task force called 11 by 15, or more recently, Rock Wisconsin, that has been a major effort to get to the root of these causes. And along with all of this, we find so many myths that are adding to the discussion on not just U visas and crimes, but undocumented coming to our country and so forth. We know that there are only 5,000 visas issued a year worldwide for unskilled labor. Worldwide.
And so that's not a lot.
Not a lot.
Linda, that's not a lot.
There's also up to a 24-year waiting period for someone to obtain citizenship. There's high very low government quotas. Also, we have to remember that point that crossing the border is not a felon or even a misdemeanor.
It's like jaywalking.
It's like jaywalking.
Mm-hmm. And that was Linda. Again, listeners, I'd like to welcome you to this very good conversation with Linda Boyle, who is Vice President of the Racine Interfaith Coalition, and another member of RIC, Sue Spicer. Both of them have some good information with regards to their services and what they are doing in our communities on the issue of immigration reform and U visas, and how this service actually benefits our community together. Both ladies have been educators in their background, and their passion for making sure that justice is equally applied to all individuals, regardless of where they are from, and as long as they are being productive members of society, they think that all individuals should be treated fairly. So welcome again, ladies.
Thank you.
So there's a, Linda, you spoke briefly about the initiative that RIC has for the prison to pipeline, the prison...
prison pipeline.
Right. Thank you.
School to prison pipeline,
and the task that RIC has taken on for the over-incarceration in the prison system.
Yes.
What other services do you, or what other programs do you guys work with connected in the community that meets some of the needs for individuals that you service?
We have a number of task forces, to one of them immigration, and one also the 11 by 15 or the Rock Wisconsin, working on the mass incarceration issue. Mm-hmm. We also have a transportation task force. We've worked on health care in the past. In the past, we've also worked on education issues. We work as an advocate for many groups. We also have a program that's part of our RIC task force that's called Turn Up the Vote, mm-hmm. that helps with voter engagement, and particularly with immigrants. We are trying to find a way now to show support and help people understand from the immigrant community, mm-hmm. how to go to the polls and vote without fear, mm-hmm. even though they have become citizens, mm-hmm. and have lived here for many, many, many years. There, mm-hmm. are still many that are not feeling like they can go to that poll and vote without some type of fear, which has been historically a problem with many of our minority groups, mm-hmm. in the country.
So how have you worked with regards to what Linda has just spoken on, empowering individuals who have now become citizens, empowering them to vote? That's a hard, I'm interested in knowing a little bit about that, because that is a hard task, getting individuals that have historically not voted, letting them know the benefits of that.
Well, both Linda and I are something called a special registration deputy, and those are people who are deputized by the city clerk to register people so that they can vote. And we find that necessary in the city because people tend to move around, mm-hmm. and you have to be established 28 days before an, right. election. So, right. every time you move, you have to re-register.
Yes.
So we work with registration drives, and we go to places. For instance, I also work at two different food pantries. Mm-hmm. And through the food pantries, we set up a situation where we have a special registration deputy at the food pantry. So when people come in, we can say, are you registered to vote? Have
That's
you moved
smart.
Recently? And then we can get them registered. And then a lot of this... let's say the low-income communities, mm-hmm. the are undocumented, tend to fall into that category because, mm-hmm. their wages are very low. We also help them get, if they're citizens, a driver card or a photo ID card. Mm-hmm. And we do that through the food pantries. We pass out information on how you do that. And then RIC provides rides out to the Department of Motor Vehicles to get that photo ID so that you'd be able to vote. Mm-hmm. I'm also working in a, I work in a polling place. So when people come in to the polling place, we can help them. And you're allowed anytime. A lot of people don't know that when you go to vote, you're allowed to bring a sheet of paper with you, for instance, that you have listed who you want to vote for on the paper, and you can just copy it off onto the ballot. A lot of people don't know that when you come to a polling place, you can ask for help, and somebody can go and help you fill out the ballot if you don't know how. You can also bring someone with you if you feel more comfortable with that, and they can fill in the ballot for you. So there are a lot of things, and it's a little bit intimidating. And I was talking with a lady. I worked at the food pantry this afternoon, and I was talking with a lady who had helped some homeless people vote. And she was saying that it was intimidating for them to go to the polling place. But when they came out, there was such pride that they had actually fulfilled their civic duty and voted. And our Latino members of our committee tell us that they have their children who are born here in the United States are citizens, and they could vote too, but they don't know how. And so one of the things that we're going to do as part of this task force is we're going to hold a how to vote orientation in July, because the August primary should be pretty small. There shouldn't be a big turnout for that, and this would be a good time. But what we're going to do is show them how you come into the polling place, you go up to the poll worker, you show them your driver's license, you state your name, they look it up, they give you a number, you go get a ballot, you go and fill the ballot out, and then you put it into the voting machine. And we're going to not only go through how to do that, but then we're going to have some practice where we do, actually they come up and practice beforehand. And then we're going to try to get some volunteers who are Spanish speaking, who would be willing to be at some of the polling places or go with someone who may need some translation or may need some help with their voting. And we hope that that takes some of the stress out of it. If you have a chance to practice something ahead of time, you feel a little more confident about trying it.
That is good. That is good. And I love those goals. I love those future goals and those plans on especially empowering individuals to do that. Are there any other future goals, Ms. Vice President of RIC, that you can share with any of our listeners that are out there that you plan that will hopefully assist in improving and strengthening the services that RIC provides?
As we move forward, of course, on immigration, we are moving into a more statewide initiative. And we also are working statewide with Rock, Wisconsin, and the 11 by 15 task force, working to keep in good touch with the legislators and writing letters and making personal contacts with them. When bills do come forward that either will enhance or deteriorate from our goals. So a lot of it, we do have a Madison Action Day where all of us go to Madison and meet with our local politicians there. That is one of our big initiatives that we do every year. We have leadership trainings across the state, and through our Gamaliel organization, which is our national organization, we have trainings for leaders across the state. One of our goals specifically for our immigration task force is to train leaders, Spanish-speaking leaders, that will work more directly with the community. What we were finding is that many of us on our committee look like Sue and I, and retired teachers and people who now had a little more time because of being retired. We were meeting almost for coffee in the morning, and now we have moved to the evening to alleviate that and to make sure that we can train people who are more directly affected. That's one of our specific goals, and each of the task forces have goals. Of course, transportation is another huge, huge issue. I mean, even if you relate it to immigration, most of the people working are going to a truck farm, where the fruit and vegetables are produced. there certainly aren't any bus routes going there. So the transportation issue is huge for every part of our community.
Are there any elected officials that are that support your efforts?
Senator Robert Wirch, Bob Wirch.
All right.
Corey Mason.
All right. Okay.
Let's see. Our past Senator John Layman, of course, was very involved and is a member of Racine Interfaith Coalition also.
Okay.
So locally, those two stand out right off the top.
If there were individuals who wanted to get involved and volunteer, is there a website that they could go to and visit?
Our website is rickracine.org, Racine Interfaith Coalition. Racine.org.
Could you spell that out for our listeners?
Racine Interfaith, R-A-C-I-N-E, Interfaith, I-N-T-E-R-F-A-I-T-H, Coalition, C-O-A-L-I-T-I-O-N, I think, Racine.org. And there's information about each of our task forces on that particular website.
Perfect, perfect.
I think you can get there with just RICRACINE.org.
All right.
Either one would
I
work.
I think either one works.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, listeners, try the RICRACINE.org one first. Okay. Do that one.
It should work.
Is there a phone number in which, if somebody wanted to get some more information,
yes,
they could call?
635-9532. Right. That's 262-635-9532. And that is our Racine Interfaith Coalition office.
All right.
And there will be someone there that would be able to give you information. And also to contact Pastor Michael Miller, our Racine Interfaith Coalition organizer, who would be able to be contacted through that office or the website also. He would be very interested in speaking to people who would like to join us.
I'm sure that he would. Do you have any information on approximately how many people you have provided direct service to from U-Visas that they've actually applied? Do 10, a dozen over the last year or two, or is it still something that you are hoping to get more information out so that individuals can get more information on and be aware of it? Because, again, I knew nothing about U-Visas and what it had to offer, and I attended a meeting from other leaders, and maybe leaders know, but I don't know how much information just the common citizen might know about it.
That would have to be something that would be obtained through the police department.
So the first step would have to be to then go to the police?
First of all, they would, if they feel they are able to obtain a U visa, they would have to get the application.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would have to make sure that they obtain the record of the aggressor and as much information as possible about the actual incident.
Mm-hmm.
The best place to have guidance is actually Catholic Charities in Waukegan.
Oh, really?
Because that
Waukegan, Illinois?
Waukegan, Illinois, because that is where the Mexican consulate is, and that is seems to be the Catholic charity group that works specifically on U visas.
Okay.
Again, we must remember that a visa and a U visa are two different things.
Yes. The visa allows you more rights than the U visa does. Is that the main difference between the two?
Well, the U visa basically is one that is obtained only if there's been the physical and mental abuse. Visa comes with a green card and so forth.
Okay.
Also, after that, then they finally go to submit their application to whatever police department they are affiliated with or whatever residency they are in. But when you mention getting information on numbers as far as to how many have been offered or obtained,
mm-hmm.
I'm sure that would have to come from the police department.
Okay.
I don't know who else would be tracking that. Maybe the immigration authorities too, but I certainly know that the local police departments wouldn't know how many they have actually allowed to obtain
them.
But in talking about how many people we've affected, remember that U visas are just a new initiative that we have. Primarily our initiative was to educate people about undocumented, and there are a lot of myths that need to be destroyed. You know, most people say they suck off all of our social services.
Yes.
And that's incorrect.